You've never done anything wrong. How does that feel? Everything you've ever done is just the best that you knew how to do in the moment. And it's only later that we go back and we judge it as being right or wrong. The right or wrong is a judgment that we layer on top of what actually happened. And that judgment is what keeps you resisting the past.
I want to get to that place of, you know, feeling like I have some freedom. Like that was the intention when I started the business, thinking like, oh, I'll be in charge of my own time.
Because the moment that you think that you did something wrong, then you're also going to be scared that you're going to do something wrong in the future. What's one thing that you know to be true now? Welcome everybody to another episode of the podcast. I got an incredible guest here today, Karen Allen. I am excited to get to know you, Karen. All I know right now is that you are living in Ottawa, Canada, and you probably have an online business of some sort.
I do. So I'm a coach,
yes.
And specifically a love and empowerment coach. So I work with women usually in midlife who've been through a breakup or a series of bad relationships, and they can't quite figure out why they're successful in their careers and other area of their life, but not in their relationships. And there's always a lot of underlying patterns going on there. So I help them to rebuild their life and confidence and to change those patterns so that it's not just about, you know, finding a partner. It's about having better quality relationships with everybody and better quality relationship with themselves too, so that they're, most of the women I work with don't do very well at prioritizing themselves and their happiness and their well-being. So that's kind of step one, is fixing that piece of the pie. So I have a front-end program that helps women post-divorce breakup to rebuild their life and confidence and get to a place of feeling good again. And then the second program is about dating.
Cool. Amazing. Did you say love and empowerment?
Yeah, because really the empowerment part is the biggest piece. Like I'm not a dating coach. I do teach my clients how to date strategically and effectively and safely in this nutty world. But that part comes later. Like really most of my clients are struggling with, you know, patterns of codependency and overgiving and things like that. So we have to deal with those issues first. Mm-hmm. And so really I'd say what my expertise is in particular, and where I'm different from most relationship coaches, is I'm not teaching people how to catch a guy or what words to say in text. I'm teaching them fundamentally how to love and value themselves so that they are naturally, you know, setting themselves up for better quality relationships.
Fantastic. I love that. That's amazing work. Very important, very much needed. That's incredible. Good on you. What inspired you to do this work?
Well, often the case for those of us in helping professions, we start out because we were struggling with the same stuff, right? So I've been both widowed and divorced. My first husband died when I was 22, and
holy shit.
Yeah, it was a crash course in in loss and grief and rebuilding your life. I eventually remarried, had kids, and realized I was in a relationship with a good person, but we were just so opposites that nothing was working, and we could torture ourselves for 10 more years or realize that it wasn't a good fit. So split up with a 2 and a 4-year-old hanging on to my leg, and started a business at the same time. So I kind of jumped off two cliffs at the same time, and here we are 16
when
years
was
later.
That 16?
Yeah. Wow. So then after that, I took a break from and just decided to focus on me doing the work I teach other women to do, and learned how to finally, you know, put my happiness first and take care of myself properly, like I was taking care of everyone else. And so got to a really good place. But then when I started dating, I was repeating patterns. I was like, why am I such a magnet for narcissists? Like, dear God. And so it took
Can't be me.
Yeah, like no kidding. It took me quite a few years to figure it out because there was nobody doing what I do. There's lots of dating coaches teaching techniques to date, but they don't teach, you know, how do you avoid the wrong ones? And what is it in you that gets drawn to the wrong ones? And nobody was really looking at that. So once I kind of pieced it together, then I retrained as a coach and I built my own programs. And so I've been doing my coaching work for going on 13 years. My programs have been running for 10, and I was doing really great. until last year, and then everything kind of went sideways simultaneously. And so now I'm trying to figure out this is what led me to the call with you. It's like, dear God, what do I even do at this point to fix what isn't working? Because I haven't been able to pay myself for half a year, and that is not a fun position to be in. So,
No, that sucks. Yeah. Okay. That's, let's see what we can do. So can I ask what happened with your first husband?
Cancer. And since lost my dad and brother to cancer and my mom to Alzheimer's. So apparently my soul chose a lifetime of grief and loss. I'm laughing, not because it was funny, but I have moved through that obviously at this point.
Yeah.
But I've had part of what went wrong in my business was what was happening to me personally. In the last 10 years, I've lost 12 loved ones. So it's a lot to try to juggle that while being a single parent to two children, while running a business. And my nervous system just flatlined. So last year I hit a massive burnout. And so I'm trying to rebuild my business in a way that supports my nervous system. I want to get to that place of, feeling like I have some freedom. Like that was the intention when I started the business, thinking like, oh, I'll be in charge of my own time. I'll have financial freedom. And then I kind of just worked myself into a corner to where, especially the way the business model structure that I had chosen, it requires my effort all the time. And there's no real passive income coming in or way for me to step back. So if I do need to take care of my health, or even when my dad died and my brother died, like my dad, my brother, my stepdaughter died in a 7-month period. And I'm trying to take care of two of those three. And which requires me to step back from my business. But then as soon as I step back from my business, everything grinds to a halt. And then similarly last year, I needed to take care of myself and everything grinds to a halt. So I'm like, okay, there's got to be a solution to this. And but yeah, anyway, and I don't know how much else you want to know about my business yet. I'll let you lead.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, okay. I definitely want to go there. But first, I just want to, so one of the lenses that like my whole work, if you will, is like the transition from the world of duality to operating from the world in the world of soul, right?
Yeah, I've been very much on that journey.
Right.
I'm on the journey. I wouldn't say I'm there, but I'm on the journey. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, none of us are, right? It's like we would be dead. We wouldn't be here anymore, I think. And we were. In the world of duality, right, we can't have light without dark. We can't have joy without sadness. We can't have loss without what?
Well, without a connection. Like, I mean, if anything, the I do think at 51, the number of people I've lost in my life is a little unusual. We all eventually lose people, but I lost a lot of people and lost them early and lost them young. So half those people died young. So, but the on the flip side of grief is, first of all, it does two things. I think it's part of what makes me so empathic and compassionate, because it just cracks your heart open. But it also makes you appreciate the people you have in your life on a whole nother level, because you know that people take for granted how long they have people for. I think I don't, because I've lost a lot of them. So I really value the people in my life, and I always say people before things. And so
amazing. So just, there's two things here. Just logically, I love everything you're saying. Logically, light, dark, joy, sadness, loss, what?
I mean, I think joy. I don't know.
Loss. You lost something? What's the opposite
gain.
Of that?
Gain, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Gain.
Yeah.
Gain, right? You lost something, you found it, you gained something. All right. Yeah. So if there's loss, there's gain. So what's the gain?
Relative to each person, I'm trying to figure out how to globally, like I've kind of learned different things from each person I've lost. I gained a different perspective on life, for sure. I gained the understanding of what really matters and what doesn't. And I definitely, one of my learning lessons in all these people, especially the ones who died young, was the importance of taking better care of my physical health. And I think I gained more of a connection with my spirit too, with with source, call it what you will. Yeah, for sure. Because when somebody dies, you're searching for meaning. You're searching for, like, why did this happen? And especially when they die young, like, what is the meaning in this? What are we here for? It definitely caused me. And my husband died when I was only 22. Like, we were married. I had a wedding and a funeral 6 weeks apart.
Did
It
you know he was
definitely.
sick when you got married?
Not when we got engaged. Like, so we'd been together 2 years. We got engaged. The same month we got engaged, we found out he was dying. We were planning on waiting 2 years to get married, but the doctor said you got 3 months. So we decided to get married more just for the love and symbolism of it. And then 6 weeks after, we had a funeral. So it was the same people. It was a very strange situation for sure.
20, 21, you're barely a person at that age. Like
I
it's.
know. And it was hard because nobody understood what I was going through. I mean,
Of
certainly
course.
none of my friends had lost someone, and my parents' generation hadn't even lost anybody yet. Like, I was really on the young side of having this happen. So I didn't really have a lot of support for that. So I learned a lot. It's part of why I do so much work around emotions and emotional regulation with my clients, because I learned the price of burying your feelings, which is what I did at the time because I didn't know what else to do. And then I went into a 2 year depression. So I certainly experienced the cost of doing the wrong thing with grief and sadness, versus allowing yourself to feel your emotions and not shaming yourself for what you're feeling and finding the support you need. So I learned so many things from that experience. But definitely what the death of my husband did was it caused me to go, like, to look for spiritual meaning. That was probably the real biggest gain, especially from his death, was trying to understand. And I had questions around, is there life after death? My conclusion is yes. My conclusion is our souls go on. I've had enough communication with all my loved ones who've passed over that I have zero doubt anymore that we change form. We don't stop being. So I've made peace with that. It's still hard to lose somebody in their physical form, but I have absolute belief we continue in our spiritual form. So the biggest gain is probably the spiritual component, I would say. Yeah.
So beautiful. I'm so touched by your, I mean, it's your story and I empathize with the pain that you had to that you went through and I can feel it as you're
Yeah.
talking about it.
Yeah.
You're one hell of a soul.
It's funny because I go through these moments. I was talking to my friend about this yesterday. It's like, I don't know, my soul signed up for a whole shit ton of things in this lifetime, and I guess it's because it thought it could handle it. There's days where I don't feel like I can handle it, like this stretch of now 7 months of no income. I'm like, my God. I'm like, okay, I'm trying to trust and surrender and allow and believe and just take the next best step, but I feel like I have zero visibility to what the hell the pathway is in front of me. I can tell I'm being redirected or something needs to change, and I've been trying to figure out the. But I know ultimately that's just me trying to control everything. And so it's this weird thing of I need to do something because I need income, but I'm trying to trust and surrender and allow at the same time. It's a weird, I don't know if you've experienced this, but it's a weird thing to try to juggle because you need to take some action because, like, you got to pay your bills, but you also I know enough about spirituality and how the universe works that when something big happens that you don't like, because that's happened to me so many times now, there's a blessing in that. There's a silver lining. So I'm like, okay, well, there's something in here I'm meant to be experiencing. So.
100%. Yeah, no, I certainly know exactly that place. There's one small habit that I just want to call out. It's you've a number of times done you talk in the you in the second person. When you lose your husband, then you this, then you that, then you this. It's just a common way to deflect a little bit to avoid actually owning what it is, right? So
I think it's the natural teacher in me, and I'm a very other-oriented person. So I'm always trying to see how what I'm experiencing can benefit others. It's part of how I've gotten meaning out of things, I guess. But yeah, like, I mean, when my brother died a couple years ago, it was like I was going through the death of my husband all over again because I was watching my sister-in-law take care of my brother the exact same way, almost exact same age. Like the parallels were so weird. And it just rocked my world because in my brother's case, I didn't feel that he had to die. Like he was an alcoholic and he didn't know how to manage, like how to deal with the emotions from the experiences we had in childhood. And I had tried a number of times to get through to him and he just wouldn't accept anybody's help. And it was so hard to watch him spiral down. So that was soul crushing. So that was part of what, losing my dad and my brother back to back, and my brother just seemed so tragic that it just
I
took the
get
wind out of my sails. And then I started questioning my mission and my business and what am I doing? And I lost my energy and my motivation. So that was kind of last year. Now I think I've reconnected with my mission, but it's but the abundance part hasn't come back yet. Like I've gotten back to a place of feeling good, but something's not clicking.
We'll figure it out. We'll see where we can get to. Yeah, we'll figure it out. So I want to double click on the loss and gain. There's a man I heard speak. Was actually a Tony Robbins event. It was beautiful. And this man was talking about how he lost his son and how he processed the grief and worked through it. But it was clear from his talking about it that he had mentally kind of moved through it, but there's still a piece there that he hadn't worked through, and he wasn't aware of it himself. And so at the end of that talk, Tony, takes the microphone and he's like, "Listen, my friend, here's the thing you're missing is it's not that your son died. He did die, right? But you're focusing on the fact that your son died instead of focusing on the fact that your son lived. Right? The fact that he died doesn't take away from the fact that he lived. Right? But now you take that moment of he died and makes it like dominate things. And I know that you've done so much work on this. You've processed so much, but the way you tell the story is still focused around the loss. So there's a habit there, and it's also a cultural habit, right? Everybody's going to say, "Oh my God, you lost your husband. Oh my God, you lost your brother. Like, that's tragic. It's terrible. It shouldn't have happened. It was too early. It's too, like, it wasn't his time yet, whatever." Like, that's not how the universe works, right? Nobody goes before their time. Like there's this Ayurvedic saying that 1,000 doctors can't, keep a man alive, past his time. And 1,000 swords can't kill a man before his time. Right? People go when they go. They go when they're supposed to go. Maybe your first husband went because, I don't know, whatever his soul, there's something that his soul decided this is not functioning. And it would be a huge gift to you to actually go through this so that you could really reconnect with yourself on a spiritual level in a whole different way, so that you could be a gift to so many other women and people and men out there with what you've gained from this, right? And that was the gift to you. And so it's like everything is just remembering everything that happens for you.
Yeah, I agree with that. Very much so. It's interesting because I do believe our soul chooses our exit point. And I've thought about that a lot with respect to why did my husband leave then, and why did my brother leave then? And for me, the harder part wasn't even the age or the exit point; it was the way, because they all like it was such an excruciating experience watching my dad, my brother, and my husband die, because they chose really difficult, painful deaths. Like what happened to their body and the level of pain they were in. Like as an empathic caregiver, watching that was just is excruciating. So the question that I will admit I don't have an answer to yet in my head is the okay, I get that we all die and we choose our exit points, but why does it have to be that horrible? Like why can't you just go to sleep? And that's it.
I get
Like,
it. And that's your judgment. Right. It's your judgment saying it's horrible. It shouldn't be this way.
It felt horrible as the caregiver watching it. It
I know.
looked like it felt horrible to them too, but as the person watching, it certainly didn't seem like a good experience. But
100%. Yeah, but there's pain and there's suffering, right? There's pain is like whatever that happens. The suffering is our story, our resistance to it, saying it shouldn't be this way. There's a beautiful story by Aaron Katie tells of like she visited a friend in hospital, and this friend was like, yo, like she's like, look at my leg, my right leg, it's all swollen up. It's terrible. And she's like, I'm sorry, I don't see the problem. Like, don't you see? Like, it's don't you see how big my leg is? It's terrible. It's like. And like she's like, I'm so sorry, I'm still not seeing the problem. It's like, but look at my other leg. It's like it's normal size. This is, can you see how big it is? It's like, oh, now I see the problem. You think this leg should be by this like this other leg. That's your problem. Right? The problem is not the leg, is the problem that you think it should be any other way than it is. That's the problem. And this is where you gotta own that you took that on. That pain is yours that you chose to take on. I'm not saying it's not horrible and like I completely get it on a human level, and yet like it is a way that you're causing suffering for yourself by taking that on. It doesn't, your suffering over it doesn't make their pain any easier to bear,
True.
right? Like, it really
Well,
doesn't.
and arguably they're not in pain now, so
Exactly,
it's
right?
true.
They went in the way that they did for whatever fucking reasons we don't know. And you are here to receive the gift of that. And that is so, like, what you have to bring is, it's so obvious from just being with you here is, oh my God, like so deep, so powerful, so transformational, so valuable, so needed in the world today. And you are clearly a very special being that have chosen or been chosen for this mission. And now it's like, okay, let's really claim it. And I think the pathway is to really like go back over everything that happened, all the circumstances that happened, quote unquote, to you, all the decisions, the choices that you made along the way, and go back and choose it again. Like really make peace with every last bit of your past, not just accepting it, but actively like choosing it. By seeing, oh shit, this was actually really good for me. This is actually really good what that this happened. Even the dip that you're in now, what a gift that it is, that it gets you to revisit some of these things, that it got you to this conversation with me today to really, really completely make peace with your past. Because as long as you're dragging your past around into the present and into the future, it's like you're driving, looking into the rearview mirror. Like you're not gonna, you're not gonna be very effective.
Yeah, I'd say the bigger piece of my past that's haunted me, because for the most part, I feel that I've made peace with the people I've lost. The part that has, I think, been impacting my business more is the fear of visibility piece, which comes from a childhood of emotional abuse and bullying and all that. So I've analyzed it to death. I know where it comes from, and I've done a lot of work around my identity, and I can still feel it in me. I can still feel it in my body, that fear when I go to turn on a camera or do social media posts, or I've done public speaking. Like, I've done so many things, but I can still feel it there. I can still feel this fear of attack in particular.
Got it.
And it's like, how do I get friggin' rid of that? And just own my truth and stop worrying about what the hell everybody else is gonna say. 'Cause I've been viciously attacked on several occasions, and then it causes me to pull back, and that's the part I've gotta get past somehow.
I definitely want to go there. I just want to tie up a couple loose ends here. So the I would invite you to change your language around it. So stop talking about loss. Like, so what you're doing is you're saying, my loss, I lost, right? And like, once you say my loss, it becomes part of your identity, right? Or I lost, it becomes about you. Try on a different language that could be they transitioned, right? They moved on. They chose to transition. Like, whenever you tell the story, use language like that. Because the words that we speak really fucking matter. And every time you say I lost or my loss, it's keeping you stuck in a past of and a story of loss. And the story of gain is just as valid and more valuable. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good observation.
So just stop talking about it in that way. Yeah. And that doesn't, I'm not saying spiritual bypass on the pain and the emotions around it. All that stuff is welcome to be here, but we don't need to keep reinforcing the story of loss. Yeah. Cool. Beautiful. And then the very common pattern is the wounded healer, right? So when you go in and you're like the empath and you're feeling the pain and the suffering of the people who are dying of cancer around you and all of that stuff, right? That's in the drama triangle, it's the hero move. I don't know if you're familiar with the drama triangle.
No, I'm not.
The drama triangle is so critical. It's like it's 99% of politics, it's 99% of media, of like whether you were talking newspapers or social media or like movies and shows, of lawsuits, of international relations politics. Like it's fucking drama triangle. So the drama triangle is that there's a victim, right? I'm a victim because somebody something, right? Like it can be because of my mom, my dad, my spouse, the weather, this other country, like whatever. I'm a victim. There has to be a villain, right? So there's a victim and there's a villain. And then the third piece is the hero. Some people call it the rescuer. So the hero is the role that steps in and says to the victim, "Oh yeah, poor you, you really are a victim. Bad, bad villain, terrible, terrible villain. You are really a victim. Let me help you. Let me help you." Which seems like a noble thing to do.
But it keeps the other person in a victim disempowered state.
Exactly. Bingo, right? And this is so much of what happens. And so the tendency will be, and we all have this like tendency that it's very human to do, but the tendency will be to come from like my wound and want to help other people with their wound, but subconsciously we're keeping them stuck in their wound by doing that. And there's no judgment on this, there's no shame around it. It's very human, but it's not serving anybody. And so and usually there's an element of it comes from like we don't really want to feel our pain. We don't really want to deal totally with our wounds, so it's easier to focus on someone else. It's like, oh yeah, I can fix you, right? Again, superhuman, very human, and no judgment, but we want to be aware of it and not do that. So the way out of the drama triangle is awareness, presence, just noticing what's going on. And then each of the three roles transform to a different level. So the victim becomes the creator. Instead of like, oh, poor me, I can't because blah, 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 the creator says, here's what I want, here's how I'm going to go get it. Right? Takes responsibility for creating the reality that they want. That's the victim position. The villain position can choose to step into the role of the challenger. Right? Where it's like you can do better. Like, come on. Like, you got more in you. Like, more like a paternal kind of approach. We're challenging people to step up to do better, but we're not like making them wrong, right? We're just challenging. And the hero position can turn into the coach. So the coach is the person who sees the victim as the creator that they are and then reminds them of the resources that they already have available to them, right? Without creating the codependency that the
Yes,
victim hero will
I
do, right?
agree. Yeah,
Yeah.
I see that very much in coaching and therapeutic worlds that a lot of codependency gets created.
100%. Yeah. And there's also that, like, if I'm your like therapist, like the moment you're quote unquote fixed, you don't need me anymore. So like my incentive is to keep you stuck, so you keep coming back,
It's
right?
funny you say that. I always say to my clients, my job is to work myself out of a job. Like, if I'm doing a
Right.
good job, you don't need me anymore.
That's how it should be. Yeah. Yeah. Or you just want to go deeper, and that's fine.
Well,
Like, you know, yeah.
but you don't
Like in
need
your
me in that
case.
you have the tools to be able to do things for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Cool. So I just wanted to touch on those. So let's talk about the visibility. What's the story?
The story, I try to stay out of the story because I have spent so much time analyzing it that I'm trying to evolve past that to be in my empowered self, which
I get it.
I'm feeling more and
And
more like I'm getting there, but I can still feel snippets of it. So
I get
anyway,
it.
the
And
short version of this,
notice here the use of the word trying.
Well, because we're always a work in progress, I don't want to say I'm
No,
there. If I was there, I wouldn't
I
be struggling right now.
Right, no, I get
So
it. I get
it's
it.
honesty.
Yeah.
I'm certainly feeling
I
much more empowered now than I was,
it. It's
last
just
fall,
I listen
but
for these things. I'm a programmer.
I
And
know
it's
I'm in a
like
work in progress.
it's but the trying what the trying says is like there's trying and doing, right? I can be working on something and like actually doing it, but trying is this like weird in between? I'm kind of pretending like I'm doing, but I'm not actually doing. So I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm just saying that the fact that you use that word is a flag. It's like, huh, what's behind that?
Because I feel like, I mean, I've done 30 years of therapy, coaching, every type of flipping healing modality known to man. And I feel like my family of origin stuff, I've made tons of progress. I can see all the progress I've made. And it still feels, you know, when you step in dog poo and it kind of stays stuck to your shoe and you can still smell it. It's kind of like that. So,
Again, no, I totally, I 100% get it. I'm just, yeah.
So I know
So
there's some remnants there
tell me
because
the
I can
story.
feel it when I. So the story is basically, I would say my mom wasn't mentally well, but that wasn't diagnosed or understood at that time. And so, you know, she had 4 kids in 5 years. She was exhausted. She was depleted, and she was physically there, but not emotionally there. She was very unhappy and very critical. And as a sensitive kid, I kind of took on responsibility for trying to make her happy, and but it never worked, right? And she, for some reason, had a particular thing with me, and just didn't seem to like me very much. So, you know, you grow up thinking your mom doesn't like you. You think there's something wrong with you. So I spent my whole
Oh,
life trying to
wait,
fix
wait, wait,
myself.
wait, 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 wait. You? Are you talking about me? You
Me.
said you grow up thinking
Sorry.
your mom doesn't like you.
I
You,
don't
I'm,
know.
I, you're
Yes.
projecting onto me, man.
Not you.
I'm
I
just
meant.
messing with you. I
So
know.
the. Yes.
Let's say it. Just say I.
I felt like there must be something horribly wrong with me. And so I spent, which is what kind of pushed me into the perfectionist over giving, overachieving, straight A's, all that kind of shit, over functioning in my relationships. But in addition to my mom, it wasn't just my mom. My older sister hated me, and bullied me and made my life a living hell. So, you know, it felt like torture going home after school. So I was in every extracurricular I could be in to not go home. And the second I could get out at 17, I was out, and I was completely financially independent from 17 on. So, I didn't feel loved. I didn't feel appreciated. I didn't feel valued. And it was not a good thing to be visible. I spent most of my childhood trying to hide. I hid in the closet, I hid in the woods, and I hid at school. And I just tried to not be home as much as possible because the more I succeeded or did well, the more my older sister bullied me because she, I guess, was my best way of understanding it. It was on some level jealous, but yeah. So anyway, so I learned that it wasn't a good thing. Oh, and every time I tried to talk, my mom slapped me too, which didn't help either. So in terms of being connected to my voice and being able to express myself and feeling safe to do that, that wasn't there in the underpinning of my childhood. Yeah, and so then that repeat experience of being targeted, attacked, every time I do try to say, somebody jumps down my throat, or it became magnified a couple of years ago when I had a woman trying to destroy my business on first social media and then national media. That was fun.
Can you tell me an example of like a story like they literally jump down your throat? Like what is that? How does that work?
Oh, I mean, if I got criticized for breathing, like, I mean, every single thing I said was wrong.
Wait. Who jumped down your throat?
My older sister in particular, my mom to
How did
some
she fit there
degree,
if
but
she's older? How does she fit?
what do you mean?
How does she fit in your throat?
Yeah, it's an expression.
Oh, Got it.
Yeah.
I see.
I
I
don't know. It's a
see.
weird expression when you think about it, but yeah.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
It is.
So, okay, what I'm noticing here is yeah, there's a lot of like let me put it this way. So the way that you relate to your story, to your history, to your past, right, is always going to be very selective. That your mind will generalize, distort, delete, like it's very imperfect. Yeah. And so what happens is that we look at our history selectively, not consciously, but unconsciously, we look at our history very selectively to reinforce a belief that we already have. And so when you're the story that you tell gets very dramatic, right? They jump down my throat. Like I get criticized every time I breathe. Like that's a lot. Like you breathe it when you sleep. You realize that, right? So like you basically you're saying you haven't slept at all as a kid because you got criticized every time. So I imagine you couldn't sleep if everybody's like criticizing you 24/7.
I mean, no joke. I used to try to sleep with my eyes open because I was afraid. So
No,
I'm not joking.
I get it, but it wasn't you weren't being criticized literally every hour of every day, every minute.
No, but there certainly wasn't. I don't
I'm
have a
not trying to
sleep.
minimize what you went through. I'm just trying to get you to see how you're using language to perpetuate your own suffering. All right. Do you get what I'm saying?
Well,
Yeah.
I don't usually go back into the story for a reason because I'm evolving past it,
I get it.
but
And
you
but
asked
what
me to
I'm
tell you, so I had to t like
No,
so I was
100%. But there so what where I'm getting at is like rather than like, oh, I don't want to go there, let's go there but look at it with fresh eyes to see what actually happened. Because there's as long as there's still a story there of like this is what happened, that becomes the evidence that your mind uses to keep you stuck in the pattern that you're talking about, like fear of visibility. But we can look at it like with a little bit of detachment, a little bit of space around it, with a little bit of fresh eyes, with a little bit of reality and honesty, then we can actually see what happened with fresh eyes, and then it stops having power. That's where I'm going. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So when you so like the way that you tell it become, and I'm not judging you for this at all. I'm just pointing out that like when you, and you've clearly like I told this, I know this place very well, right? Of like we've told this story many times, and it becomes the truth, and we there's some emotional attachment to it because it serves a need for us. Again, it's very human. There's no judgment. We all do this. But that language, that way of looking at it, that lens is what's keeping you stuck. So jumping down your throat every time you breathe, you got criticized for everything. Every time you talked, you got criticized by your mom. Tell me about your older sister hating you. What's an example? What's a story? What happened that told you she hates you?
I mean, I don't know that I can pull one single story. It's I mean, even as an adult, I always thought it would change. Like I always thought she'll grow out of this. Eventually, it'll be different. And every time I'd go home to be with my siblings and family, I'd think, you know, the. I mean, even when I was little, she used to play a game called the Let's Make Karen Cry game. So she'd pick at me or throw things at me or insult me and try to get a reaction from me. So I tried to suppress my emotions and to not react. And she'd keep at me until I'd lose my shit. And then mom would come in, I'd get in trouble, not her. And then that would just make the game more entertaining. So that was kind of the cycle in childhood. But even as adults, it didn't change much. Like, I remember one time going to get a teacup and, having a tea, and we're just sitting there, and it was always out of the blue because it would seem like she's being better, and I dropped my guard thinking, okay, maybe she's being nice now. And then the sucker punch would come when I wasn't expecting it. And so, like, I'd come in, we're all having a conversation, and I'm coming in with my teacup, and she's like, get your lips off my mug before you contaminate it. She's saying this as in her 20s. Like, this is something to this day she would still say. Like, I'm not allowed to drink from the mug that she perceives as being hers, because I'm going to contaminate it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So it was just always this, like, everything,
I
like,
get
just,
it.
I don't know.
So what?
I don't know how else to
So
explain it.
no, so okay, so let's try this for zoom out for a minute and just look at, like, if you're like a detached observer looking at the dynamic, knowing what you know today about humans and how we work and all that, what do you think is actually going on inside of her in that moment?
In that moment, God, I don't even know. I mean, I think I understand globally what her issue was with me, that it was connected to my dad. She perceived that my dad favored me. I don't know that that was exactly true, but that was her perception. And dad was the only healthy one in the family, so everybody wanted his attention. So it was kind of like a bit of a competition. The cup, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure.
So do you think that, so your story is that she hated you, or, and do you think it's more true that she hates you or that she hates herself?
I do, from understanding human psychology, know that we project stuff. So she projected a lot of stuff onto me for sure. I just, unfortunately, not knowing what I knew at the, at then, I took a lot of it on, and I just thought, oh my God, I must be a terrible person. Like, yeah.
Right. It's like a person who loves themselves would obviously not do this.
Yeah.
So it might be more true, as true, or more true to say that she doesn't hate you. She hates herself, and she actually loves you.
I will admit the behavior doesn't feel like love, but
Yeah.
yeah.
A lot of people express love in very weird ways. Right? But if there wasn't a connection there, like, she would probably just, like, not give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't know that she loves you, right? But really, she looks up to you. She wants what you have, which is the connection with dad, and maybe your, I don't know, what, like, today, your spirituality, your, you know.
I think my smile makes her mad. Like, 'cause she even commented on pictures. She's like, "You always look good in your pictures." And I'm like, "Well, like, I'm smiling. You're not smiling. It just smile." I think the fact that I've been knocked down 100 times, but I keep getting up, pisses her off. So, yeah.
She admires you. She envies you. She loves you. And she fucking hates herself. How does that feel?
It's probably true. It doesn't change the dynamic with my two sisters now, but
Well, it actually does. Every relationship, like, how you see the other person influences how they show up.
I do understand that and agree with that. The thing is, like, I spent so much of my life trying to change the dynamic, trying to be nicer, trying to be kinder, trying to, if I do this, if I say that, if I whatever, and I took on all the responsibility for making the relationship better. And she would just keep doing the same things. Like, half our family's gone. My mom, my dad, my brother's gone. I have two sisters left. I always had a good relationship with my younger sister, but my older sister always inserts herself in. So they'll get together, and I'm never invited. I don't get to come, and even when I ask to come. So You can't make somebody want to have a relationship with you.
No.
So
Yeah.
I don't know that I can change how she perceives me. She has some kind of a
No.
filter on how she looks at me, and I don't
I
want to
get that.
spend more of my life chasing somebody.
No, I totally get what you're saying. Yes, and I appreciate you spelling that out. So what I'm saying is that how you perceive other people does change how they show up. And I'm not saying that it's your responsibility. I'm also not saying that there's anything that you need to fix or change. So I think the gift here, the invitation is to realize that the reason that it stings is because there's still a part of you that agrees with her. There's still a part of you that thinks, oh, maybe I am bad. Maybe there is something terribly wrong with me.
Yeah, that's the part that's really been shifting this past year. And it's been connected. I didn't see that it was connected, but it's been connected with my own relationships, my own experiences with with partners, to a lesser degree friends, but partners in particular. Because I kept attracting a certain dynamic. I'm like, where is this coming from? And then I only just saw in the past year that it's connected to my sister. And the veil kind of finally came off where I'm like, oh, it was never true that there was something wrong with me. Like that's actually not true. That's just, an interpretation my younger self had of a situation that I couldn't understand. So, yeah, so I see it with more clarity and I'm in the process of integrating it. That's why I said to you, I can feel it's changing, but I know it's not solidified yet. So, yeah.
So the way I look at it is that everything that like we come in as souls, we come into this world with having already decided that I want to have the experience of feeling that there's something terribly wrong with me. Like that's what I call a mind bug. There's
Yeah,
something terribly wrong with me. Like
yeah.
I'm not safe. People could leave at any moment, and I can't trust, I can't rely on relationships, right? Which might give room to, which I heard you talking about your business, like this thing, like I need to do something. It's up to me to do something about it, to fix things, to take care of things, to like stay safe. Like whatever those mind bugs are, your soul decided ahead of time, these are the mind bugs I want to experience. Now I'm going to orchestrate the events so that I get to experience them, so that I can transcend them. That's the whole game of life. That's the whole game of life. And that's my lens on business too, is that we use business as a vehicle to do this work. So
Oh,
your
I
soul
agree. And
decided,
parenting
100%, exactly.
too. It's all a mirror.
Yeah. So your soul decided, I want to have this experience that, like that I'm a terrible, terribly, there's something terribly wrong with me.
And I
And
know I do
that.
that in my business. Like it definitely shows up in me trying too hard, overcompensating, over-delivering, like just trying to prove that I'm a good coach. Like, and 13 years later, I'm still trying to prove myself, right? And that's how I keep burning out because I keep doing too much, doing too much, doing too much. So I see the pattern. I just haven't. It's like the dog poo. I feel like there's still something. I
Well,
see it.
so
It just hasn't completely shifted yet. So.
I get it. And what I'm seeing you doing is that you keep using language to reinforce it, to hold it, to hold on to it, right? You're not unconsciously or not consciously, but that's the thing, that's one thing to look out for, is like really be vigilant in your language, in your choice of words, of how you say it. So yeah, the loss, transition, or it's like you're looking for it. What are you experiencing?
Well, it's just ironic because the trigger for me with my family was them nitpicking at everything I said. So it triggers me the
There you
same
go.
way. I mean, it's
Amazing.
why I went into writing. Like, but this is where it doesn't get solved for me because the reason I struggle on social media or to say what I need to say, like, I feel like I'm a pretty fucking intelligent person and I've got a shit ton of experience and things to share with the world, but I get like this. I feel like I have to script everything. I feel like I have to think about it in advance because I have to find the exact right way to say it. Because if I don't say it the right way, somebody's going to pick at how I say it. And so,
Holy fuck, yeah.
ironically, what you're doing
I
as you're
love
trying
it.
to coach me is hitting that exact same thing
Yeah,
That keeps me from wanting to be visible in the first place, because no matter how well I say something, somebody's not going to like how I say it.
I love that you say that. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. That's beautiful. It's brilliant. And you know what? Like that version of you, fucking powerful.
Like, that's what keeps me from using my voice, is this obsession with saying everything fucking perfectly. And I'm like, you can't say anything perfectly. So I just
Right.
gotta
No, I
say
get it.
something.
100%. And I'm not that. I just want you to understand, like, that's not where I'm coming from at all, right? I'm coming from noticing these things because they reveal a truth there, and I'm coming from a place of love and desiring your freedom for you, right? And these are pointers to freedom. So you're not doing anything wrong by using that language. You're actually doing something very right by revealing what some of the underlying patterns are, that are still happening. So you haven't said a word that was wrong, and I totally get that place. And what that tells me is this, like, which is like I think the underlying thing is like you're not safe. You're
Yeah.
not safe to express yourself. Yeah. Go ahead. How does that land?
Well, it just hits an emotion. I don't think I've ever felt safe.
Yeah.
I don't know if you believe in past lives, but I think it connects to this life for sure. But I think it connects to past ones too. I've been told, and it feels true in my body, that I've been persecuted and killed many times for my gifts, and I can feel that I'm kind of in hiding in this life, and that this next phase of my life is asking for me to be more visible, probably even on a scale that I don't even think I'm capable of. But that feels really fucking scary.
Yeah, and you can see, like, the whole upbringing, your mom, your sister, holding on, clinging on, holding on to your dad as like this the lo soul sense of safety.
Yeah.
All the loss, all of that, yeah. And it's like, and now the money situation, right? Like, yeah,
Well,
just
and
let it.
money, I'm sure you know, represents security and safety, right? So
Exactly.
it's like
Yeah.
the thing that was keeping me feeling safe and secure, like my life was under control, disappeared. So I'm like, oh shit. Now what? Yeah.
And then I'm not safe, and it's all up to me to fix it, to do something about it.
And then I exhaust myself and burn out because I'm always trying to fix everything.
And also, I can't do anything right. Everybody always criticizes me.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a bit of a loop, isn't
Isn't
it?
it? Isn't it? Yeah. I'm very familiar with that loop. I'm very familiar with that loop. Yeah. So what's the lie?
It's probably that I'm not. I mean, was you mean out of all those things?
Or like all of like there's multiple lies
I
here.
suspect underneath the thing that I'm trying to step into and figure out is the feeling that I'm not powerful, that I can't overcome things, that I because if I really believed in my own power, then I would not need to feel unsafe. Like, I'm saying that the right way or not, but
Yeah. Don't
like,
worry about saying anything the right way. I get it. Yeah.
if I believed in my own power, I wouldn't feel unsafe, I think.
Yeah.
And that's.
It sounds a little bit like if I did better, I wouldn't have to feel unsafe. Right.
No, I mean power in a spiritual way, like in
Yeah.
a. That feeling of being alone has been with me my whole life, too. That's like, I just have to try harder. I have to take responsibility for everything and everybody. Like, I'm a lone wolf, kind of. Like, I don't identify with being, I don't want to be a lone wolf, but I kind of
Right.
have been. The more I connect, and I find it in nature more than anything, but the more I connect with a feeling of being connected, that it's not just me, that if I can connect with source energy, my spirits, my guides, whatever, that I'm not alone trying to figure this all out. That's certainly what brings me the most peace. And when I start feeling better is when I feel like maybe I'm not all alone. You know, maybe when I can tap into my more spiritual side and gifts, maybe there's an easier way of having life work.
Yeah.
So that's the part I'm growing into.
Yeah. So if we look at them, you know, I'm not safe. Again, there's the human level and there's the soul level. Right. On a human level, we'll never be safe.
Yeah. Well, and this as a female, you know, I don't usually listen to a lot of media, but it certainly has brought it to the forefront what many females feel. You know, like just an example this week, and I'm not the only woman who feels this way, and I'm not like a hypervigilant kind of person, but you know, I'm just trying to sell something on Marketplace, and this guy says, okay, he's coming. And I'm like, and I don't feel safe having this guy come to my house when I don't know him. So I got my son to come with me, because as a woman, you always have to be thinking of that stuff. You don't know who this person is, you know? So yeah, I think it's magnified in the gender I chose in this lifetime, too. And
For
being
sure.
small, you can't see me, but I'm a small little thing. I'm 5'2", 5 foot fuck all, as my dad used to say. So, yeah, there's a vulnerability there for sure.
100%. Yeah. Like it's crazy what's happening. How they're like, our so-called leaders are letting all of us down, especially people like you, being totally let down by, you know, just running our country's into dysfunction. Yes.
And the lack of accountability for the people who should be held accountable. And that's come in my life too. It's the, I always end up taking responsibility for what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of doing that.
Yeah. And that's the hero move in the drama triangle.
Yeah.
It does that. Yeah. So yes. So on a human level, like, we will never be safe. We can have all the money in the world. We can, like, but then health, or we can get hit by lightning, or we can be, you know, one of the things I've seen recently is like, you get hit by someone, an illegal immigrant driving a car, and they're uninsured, like, you're SOL. Like, it's, there's nothing, right? Like, it's on you, and you go bankrupt and you can't work and shit. Like,
or
we have no
natural
control.
Disasters. I mean, that can just
Right.
come in any time, right? And
yeah, we have no control. So, but at a soul level, we can't be harmed.
And that's what gives me peace is when I tap into that, knowing what I know. And I know that you can be killed in physical form, but not in spiritual form. And that's when I start feeling more powerful, when I tap into that part of myself.
Exactly. So that's your path. Yeah. And it's a process for all of us to practice, to remember. And so, yeah, like the safety is in the realm of soul, and recognizing that at a human level, you've attracted, you've created a world where you're not safe. You're not safe physically. You're not safe to express yourself. You're not safe to be who you are. But that's the lie. That's the lie at the human level. And we get caught up in the story of it. And then we get like go on a detour there. And then just waking up, remembering, oh, I got lost in the story. The truth is, who I am can't be harmed. Yeah. And then there's, like, I'm always doing something wrong. Like, I'm always getting criticized. It was my fault. That, like, it's my responsibility to fix the relationship. If the relationship isn't right, then it's, I'm doing it wrong, or it's up to me, or like, but the specifically the like, I'm doing something wrong piece. What's
Yep.
the truth?
I'm doing my best. I'm not so egotistical to think I do everything right, but I know my heart, and I know my intentions, and I know that I act with integrity, and my desire is to
So
help people.
I want you to consider something. I want you to consider that you've You've never done anything wrong. How does that feel?
On a soul level, you mean?
No, I just on a word level, on a reality level, you've never done anything wrong. How does that feel?
I see, this is where I go to other people wouldn't say that, right?
Yeah, other people say all kinds of shit. There's 8 billion people in the world. Like, they have all kinds of opinions about all kinds of things.
It feels like relief if I were to believe that.
So, in any moment, thinking back on any moment, could you have done anything different? Like, what's a moment where you think, hey, I wish I'd done something else? Like,
Oh, like, I mean, I did eventually correct it, but there were a couple of times when my kids were younger where I yelled at them, and then you see the look in their eyes, and you're like, okay, that wasn't good. There's,
so was that wrong?
it felt wrong given their reactions and that I knew I had lost control of my emotions. It wasn't really their fault.
But when you look at that woman that you were at that moment with loving eyes, with God's eyes, and see the pain that she was in, right? The all her beliefs, her stories about herself and the situation, and like she's just trying, I'm guessing in that situation, you're just trying to be safe. And that's where the reaction is coming from. So is that wrong?
Yeah, it's n no, it's we're all doing the best we can with what we know at the time and with our capacity at the time, and
So I want, what I want you to want to invite you to consider is that everything you've ever done is just the best that you knew how to do in the moment. Right? Even if you did something that you kind of knew was shitty in the moment, you still there's still a part of you that believed that that was the best thing to do in that moment. And so every moment you did your the best that you could, and it's only later that we go back and we judge it as being right or wrong. Like the right or wrong is a judgment that we layer on top of what actually happened, and that judgment is what keeps you resisting the past. And like it's just, it's saying it should have been different. You didn't, you couldn't have done anything different because you didn't.
Yeah, I think you're right. It should have been different. It's like we're all trying to rewrite our past, right?
None of what you did, none of what you ever did was wrong. It had consequences. And some of those consequences we like, and some of those consequences we don't like, that's fine. Then we can deal with that, right? I yelled at my daughter. Like now she feels she has certain feelings. I have feelings about her feelings. Like those are consequences that we can deal with. Hey, I'm so sorry, I lost my temper. Like whatever. Like you can go back today and be like, hey, I realized looking back that sometimes I, was reacted in the ways that I'm not proud of. But it wasn't wrong that you did it, right? We can just deal with the consequences. Now it becomes logistics, it becomes physics, it becomes, but it's not like this moral judgment of like, oh shit, I did it wrong. Because the moment that you think that you did something wrong, then you're also going to be scared that you're going to do something wrong in the future. And so now we live in that prison of like, I have to do it right. I have to use the right words, say it the right way. Quit saying trying, like, which is just a prison.
It is.
So it becomes this like, self-awareness, self-consciousness, vigilance. And especially when it's combined with like, it's all up to me. I need to do something. And also, fuck, I'm always doing it wrong. Right.
See where the burnout cycle comes from.
So I warned you, we gotta go here in a few minutes. But I wanted to, and we didn't get to the business part, but I think you're gonna find a bunch of unlocks here. I want to do this quick exercise with you. So, if you hold out your left hand and let your left hand represent where you are and where you've been, and just like close your eyes for a sec and just feel into like just the energy of it. You don't have to see pictures, no story, but just kind of what does that energy feel like as it comes emanates from your hand? And you don't have to tell me, but just tune into it. You're welcome to tell me, but like I just want you to be the experience of it. You
Feels a bit
sensing
heavy.
it? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay, so let go of that, shake up for a sec, and then take your right hand and have your right hand represent the energy of who you're called to be, what you're called to do in the world. And just tune into that.
A lot lighter and brighter.
Yeah. So now take both hands and feel them. And I want you to really feel the gap between where you are and where you've been and where you must be, where you're called to be. And then I want you to make that gap bigger. The tendency is we want to make it smaller because it's uncomfortable. I want you to make it bigger, like so fucking big. You're like, holy shit. Holy fuck. Like, this is the soul I am. This is my calling. Holy fucking crap. What I'm even doing here. And then I want you to realize that you, the human you, the ego you, can never fill this gap, can never cross this gap. It's not possible. The only path is to be humble, surrender, and allow the divine to do its part. And whenever you operate, whenever you work on your business, I want you to work on it from, or anything, from this, from your future, your what you're called to energy. Work from that energy, not from the past. And allow the divine.
It feels like a lot less responsibility. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
I think connected to my relationships, that's why the partner part has been delayed for me too. It's because if the partner was there, I would rely on the partner and not connect to my spiritual connection, my spiritual source. I'd stay more in the 3D human side of things.
Karen, you're such a beautiful woman, such a beautiful soul. I'm so grateful to have gotten to spend this time with you.
Thank you, Calvin.
Oh,
I
pause.
wasn't sure what to expect. This was a little
Yeah.
different than
Yeah.
what I expected, but hey.
I don't know where the conversation goes either. We'll see. We see. Sometimes it becomes very tactical. Sometimes it becomes like this. Yeah. But this seems like what wanted to come up today.
I trust it was what was needed.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's one thing that you know to be true now?
That I can't do anything wrong, which means I don't need to be afraid of trying something. And my soul can't be killed, so I don't need to be afraid of what other people are going to do.
And that doesn't mean don't bring your son when
Well,
you're selling
yeah,
in the marketplace.
I'm still
Can't
gonna
do
do the
that.
3D smart things, but
Yes. Yeah.
it does feel good, and it was kind of the direction I was going in, but it does feel good to stop relying so much on my human self and energy to move things forward and to tap into source energy and stop thinking that this human body is going to do it all. Because it was feeling impossible. Like, I have these big dreams and visions. Like, I think I'm a lot like you. I heard you describing yourself. Like, I'm an ideas person. And I'm like, oh, I got all these ideas. And it's like, but my human body can't do all that because it keeps saying no. And so I got to try to create from a different place, right? And let the universe do more of the work instead of me doing it all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Calvin.
Yeah. Sweet. Keep me posted. I want to hear how this lands, how this integrates over the next couple of days and weeks.